Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 100 of the Peak of Serenity podcast. I am one of your hosts, Emilson, and joining me, as always, we have my co-host, Anomaly.
Hello.
And joining us for this very special episode, we have Babsalonius, like owner of Peak of Serenity, I think is your official title. Headmaster, Grandmaster Babsalonius. There we go.
Hi.
Thanks for having me back on the podcast I started.
Yeah, exactly. We kept the seat warm for you. Don't worry.
Yeah.
It is still the same seat too. It does need to get replaced. It's kind of falling apart. But
yeah, that seat, I guess, at least 4 years old. Episode one of this show was posted late September 2018. It is now mid February 2022. So it took us 3.5 years to get through 100 episodes. Probably 2/3 of those episodes are in the past year.
That's true.
Because we switched to, me and Anam picked up the weekly schedule in August 2020-ish, November 2020, somewhere fall 2020 range, around the like late beta for Shadowlands, kind of Shadowlands release time period.
Yep. Yeah, it's been a wild like year and a half, I guess, almost. I'm doing these every week, so.
Yeah,
we made it to 100, which is nuts.
And so when I told my wife today that you guys had asked me to be on because it was 100, she was like, 100? I mean, she knew I'd been on, you know, the couple times I've been on the last couple of years, but
yeah,
100 is a lot. That's like a real number.
I know. We did a real thing here.
Yeah.
We're a real podcast now.
Exactly.
Cool. But we do have some, we're not just going to shoot the shit about the podcast today.
That's true.
We are actually going to talk about some very exciting things that happened this week, like the release date for patch 9.2, which got announced on Thursday, as well as several other things. We also have a more like personal topic.
Quote unquote.
If you're listening to this, you can't see that, obviously. Air quotes, personal. Mine and Bab's guild is going to be transferring servers. We have not 100% identified the server we're going to yet. There's a very short list of
Mal'Ganis
deciding between. It's not Mal'Ganis. But we want to talk a little bit about what led to that, because it's very closely related to some of the other things that have happened recently, as well as some Shadowlands systems. So how about we get going with the stuff from last week? And we'll just get the elephant in the room out of the way. What's the release date? And when's this?
Oh yeah, release date is coming out February 22nd. So you'll be able to head over to Xerath Mortis then. Raid comes out, heroic version comes out a week later on March. It's the 1st.
Yep.
And then Mythic / the final three of heroic are March 8th. So Race for World First kicks off March 8th. I didn't put it in the notes, but both Echo and Liquid / Limit have their events starting on the 8th. So that is when the real people that play this game start playing again. We'll be slowly working our way behind those guys. But no, it's February 22nd, patch release date. It's pretty much what everybody had confirmed up and down for the past probably 6 weeks or so, right?
I think all of the predicted dates had basically centralized down to either February 22nd or March 1st for patch release. That 1 week window.
Yeah. It has to do a lot too with they have a bunch of events planned, like MDI type style events and some PvP stuff that occurs like weekends after this, so they couldn't really push it any further into March. So February 22nd, it's when the new patch hits. So we'll talk a little bit about this because there was a couple of changes in the release candidate build that was posted this week to some monk stuff. So but a couple other things happened this week, so we'll briefly run through these guys. We've got another resignation coming out of Blizzard. So the lead rewards designer, Mr. Russ Peterson, aka Night Moogle on Twitter, if you follow him, basically resigned from Blizzard. You will know Mr. Peterson as the reward designer behind the Toy Box, which is a great system. The Great Vault, I think that's a really solid system. And then two systems that didn't quite hit hard, Heart of Azeroth and Azerite Armor. Also one of the leads there. So yeah. Yikes. But anyway, I mean, Russ seemed, I mean, I don't know this guy individually at all.
Well, yeah, I mean, exactly. You can't win everything.
Let's be honest. You bat 500, you go into the Hall of Fame.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So there was a lot. It's funny. I don't know if you guys are followed Twitter at all, but there was a lot of backlash to specifically the Wowhead post about this.
Because people were very really, upset. Like that the tweet only mentioned. The tweet only mentioned Heart of Azeroth and Azerite Armor.
But those were two like. And I get that. And people don't like those systems. But at the same time, those were like expansion defining systems. So like if you have to balance that plus like toy, what is it? Yeah. The toy box. Like,
right. Yeah. And the Great Vault.
Yeah. The Great. I mean, maybe they mentioned the Great Vault too. But yeah, it was just I thought that was hilarious that people got very upset about at Wowhead specifically, not at him leaving and not at him. But like at Wowhead posting that.
Not even like I think upset is too calm of a word. Like people lost their collective mind over it. It was a screaming match between some people on Twitter yesterday. Like, and I mean, obviously, you know, being, you know, Wowhead guide writers, like we can see people talking about it and a lot of the people screaming at each other, people that we, you know, more or less work with. Yeah. And like it just was such a hilarious because I came into that conversation like, I don't know, an hour or two after it started and just trying to catch up and scroll through Twitter was like, oh, my gosh, this was just too much. And I just tapped out and was just like, all right, this is an insane conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had like zero skin in the game. So I'm just watching from the sidelines and I'm just like, I don't understand why everyone's so like it was so funny because like nobody said anything bad about him. Like it wasn't even about him. It was literally about the way the article was posted.
I
mean, some people said some bad things about him, but like the main infighting was like the way that they posted it.
I feel like for a lot of WoW players, saying this person designed Azerite armor is an insult. That's just an insult.
I mean, it wasn't a great system. Was not a great system.
Yeah. I mean, like Great Vault, I'm kind of torn on because I think it's worse than coins from a raid. I mean, I primarily raid, so from a raiding perspective. You know, it's kind of worse than coins in some way, but better in others in that you kind of had, you know, at least guaranteed options rather than just whiffing on a week for coins.
You can run 0 for 6 in your first 3 weeks of coins.
Right. Yeah. And so I think that provided like a lot of kind of upfront bad luck protection, you know, for that. And that was a really positive change. But at the same time, it takes away some of the choice of when you want to use your extra chance. So it kind of, from a raider's perspective, had its pros and its cons. I liked that it kind of forced me to do more Mythic Plus, forced me to do more PvP that I hadn't, you know, that I wouldn't have done otherwise. But at the same time, hated that it forced me to do stuff that I wouldn't have done. You know, so that my brain is very, my brain and my heart are kind of very torn on my opinion of Great Vault. But Toy Box, great, you know, even like Azerite armor and Heart of Azeroth, like you could see the idea behind it. Like I think the idea was solid. It was the execution that was problematic, you know, and I think in a large part, it was dead in the water almost from the beginning, you know, just on community perception.
Yeah. I mean, then they got it on the PTR, like what, 6 weeks before launch. So like, it was
unpleasant.
It might have been actually shorter. It was enough time where like any meaningful feedback wasn't making the release.
Yeah.
Like we basically got the system and that's what it was, right? So
and they did more tuning to the Azerite armor stuff after, you know, the expansion came out than before.
Yeah.
You know, especially from a Windwalker's perspective.
Exactly. Yeah. So Russ, hope he does well wherever he's headed. I hopefully he stays in games, does something interesting. He might go to one of the 12 or 13 other Blizzard studios that have popped up, somewhere. So
studios,
all right. So next up is Wowhead put out a fun post, which I always like these, which is the fact that there is a number of legendaries out there that can only be crafted in tier set slots. So I don't think this affects Mistweaver slightly in that Tier of Mourning, which is like a, you know, a tier two type legendary for us can only be crafted in helm or belt. So we get a little screwed with that when we want to double up that with a covenant legendary. But yeah, it seems like Blizzard just, they have too many gear systems in this. So like there's a bunch of them. I think like mages maybe get hit really bad. And I think maybe Shadow Priest too, where like some of their better legendaries are basically covering up a tier slot. So basically be ready to potentially change what you craft if you get a tier set drop.
This is actually a really major thing for Brewmaster. So yeah. Our best in slot legendary, I ran Sims yesterday. I did spend most of my day yesterday running Sims and working on SimC. Our best in slot legendary for Kyrian, which is ahead by a lot, is Storm's Outlast Keg. It can be crafted on shoulders, gloves, belt, all three of which are either a tier slot or where the Unity belt gets crafted, which just means that right off the bat, when we get the second legendary, which is going to line up pretty well with when most people in a mythic guild will unlock their tier sets, you're going to have to immediately turn around and recraft your Unity on another piece. Like, so you have to get the rep versus somebody else maybe that doesn't have that problem, that their legendary gets crafted on a ring or something, that then you don't have to worry about that. You can you know, kind of get the rep later and micromanage your legendary slots after the fact.
Yeah, which is like super, super annoying.
I do think that you're spot on in your statement that they just have too many different systems that they're vying for these slots. The idea of being able to put legendaries on different slots is, I think, still good. I just think that with this tier set thing, they really need them to be in off pieces. And then the legendary belt. Well, okay, straight up, there should not be a requirement for the memory of Unity. There just shouldn't. There should not be a rep requirement for that. When you complete the quest, it should give you two things. It should give you memory of Unity. It should give you the pre-crafted legendary belt. And that should be that. Just that should be it. No rep requirement. The rep can be done for conduits. It can be done for other things. But it's so silly that, you know, a quarter of the raiders are going to need to have the rep immediately when they complete that chapter of the campaign in order to actually use their second legendary.
Well, I think timeline, though, you should be almost able to do both, right? Like the timeline of it.
Well, yeah, but it means that like
grinding or anything like that to get to that point.
So I'm going to use me as an example because I hate rep grinds. I hate dailies. I will, if there's an option to not do the dailies, I will not do the dailies. So if I didn't need to have that rep at Revered in order to get memory of Unity, as soon as Unity unlocks, I would simply not do the rep. My best in slot conduit drops from the first boss in the raid. I'm going to get it from that and I don't have to worry about any of the others. I would just not do the rep. But I have to. Okay. Like, I'm feeling that pressure to not only get it done, but get it done as soon as possible in order to get the second legendary the same week as everybody else. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things that, like, even just the idea of it, you know, sucks, you know, in a lot of ways. Even if the practicality is not that bad, just it's, you know, and it, I think in a vacuum, it would be okay. But in the not vacuum that has been Shadowlands, it's just another thing onto the pile of systems that have been very rough
for and a lot of people. It's a thing that I don't feel like, in a similar way to conduit energy, I don't feel like there's a good reason for them to really stick with what their current plan is. Like, just give it as a quest reward.
Right. I mean, it's meant to be something that everybody gets, you know, like, I think there's obviously a lot of factors, you know, involved. They probably thought that the fifth week or, you know, whatever, the fourth week of Mythic is like a good time, you know, to kind of give people a power spike, you know, which in that regard is probably a great time. You know, the guilds like OE will be will be into or getting to the hard, you know, the hardest kind of chunk of bosses. Other guilds ahead of us, you know, might be on that last boss. Guilds, you know, earlier than us, you know, they'll start like that fourth week is kind of when, you know, a lot of guilds start to get to the sticking points.
Yeah.
So I think in that regard, it's probably the best possible time, but I'm definitely, you know, I definitely, you know, agree and see what you're saying, you know, about just the manner in which you have to go about it. You know, after everything, it would be nice to have something just kind of handed to us, you know, this tier after so many grinds and so many different systems on top of each other.
It's also like, so if I had to miss a week of dailies during the early part of the patch for, you know, real life reasons, then I'm going to be a week behind effectively getting my second legendary from everybody else. Whereas if I were playing, you know, something else, if I were playing Protection Paladin that doesn't have that problem. Actually, I don't know if Protection Paladin does. That's maybe a bad example. I think they have the same problem. But anyway, if I were playing a different spec that didn't have that conflict, if I miss some dailies, it's no big deal. I can just get the rep later. But since I need the rep in order to actually use a legendary, it really ups the pressure.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's like, there's like the... Yeah, having to like keep up with your guild or like that sort of idea of like not putting yourself too far behind. So we'll talk a little bit about this because they did make some rep changes actually. there is an item on our list from there. But yeah, so that's on sort of the legendary over or sorry, the overlap of like legendaries and tier sets. It's I think it'll always be potentially an issue with how much gear, different gearing systems we have right now. But yeah, you guys, I think, hit the nail on the head that maybe they make it a little less convoluted next expansion. So next up is a couple of outside of retail WoW updates, or one outside of it and then one in it. They put up a bunch of different updates to the classic season of mastery Blackwing Lair bosses. And they look absolutely, they're doing some work here. And so if you're a huge fan of classic and that playstyle, they've updated Ebonrock and Flamegore. Basically, they get a little four horsemen-like mechanic where you get a brand from each boss. First of all, the bosses pull together, which is not what you did back in classic. You used to be able to pull them separately. So now they pull together and they each give you a brand. One is a brand of shadow, brand of flame. And basically, you take more damage the more debuff stacks you get. So the idea is you probably have to switch or, you know, slide back and forth between the bosses. Try and kill them at the same time. So that'll be fun. And then they did the whole Nefarian looks like a disco light show now, with the amount of changes they made to the class call. So if you've never did classic Nefarian, basically he would call out, in the original fight, call out like every class at their own class call and you would do something interesting. Like hunters were notoriously funny ones because, the hunter class call would break your bow or break your weapon instantly. So like you had to have macros to either, you know, de-equip it or just have multiple bows in your bags. So they've updated all the class calls to do some crazy stuff. Like the Shadow Priest one is like random mobs mind flaying everywhere. Druid ones have like these brambles that roll around the arena now and like root you. So tons of changes to those fights should be fun for anybody who, you know, is into classic and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, that'll be fun. So that's on classic updates. They also just sent out a bunch of additional invites to the community council. So they made a post about that. More folks are joining the community council. We'll see how that's going. It seems like after the initial push, I haven't read the forums much, but it doesn't seem like there's much there.
Going on.
It's interesting, we'll say. So we'll just skip over that, but they're adding more people to community council. You might see some new names pop up. Maybe we'll get some new interesting feedback. So that'll be good. So I'm starting to move a little bit quickly just so we get to the good stuff today. I'm gonna skip over, I guess, maybe some of the initial PTR updates and just talk about two things that they added to the release candidate this week, and then we can get into the actual monk changes that went into the release candidate. So the first one is Cosmic Flux, which is the new currency that you'll use to either create your new max level legendaries or use in Xerath Mortis to like create tier set pieces for your alts or something like that. They've added that as an option to the Great Vault now. So not only can you get Stygia, you know, research notes for Korthia, now you get Cosmic Flux as an option if you don't take a gear piece. So that'll be a nice little boost to some currency there. They also, Blizzard, put a fairly substantial post around the rep gain in Xerath Mortis. So we're just sort of talking a little bit about this. So last week they had posted an update to the PTR that increased the amount of reputation rares drop and decrease the amount of reputation you get from like dailies and just the campaign quests. They've since reversed that. And basically, they've moved a lot of the reputation back into either like the quests that you do, dailies slash weeklies that you do in Xerath Mortis, and reduce reduce the amount of rep rares give to a lower amount. So you can essentially supplement if you're crazy, you know, and want to, you know, eke out additional rep, you can sort of chase rares around. However, you know, at this point, the way that it works out, you will hit revered by week 5, and that'll means you'll be able to get your legendary memory as soon as chapter 7 ends. So like essentially you will unlock both the legendary belt and the memory to put it on anything the same week. So you get a free legendary belt and also the ability to craft it wherever you want, all in the same time. So they fixed the issue with rep grinds, Emelson, for you. Just do your campaign quests. I guess not really. You still have to do dailies.
No, you still have to do all of the, you have to dailies. Do the bi-weekly quests. You got to do the dailies. You got to do the world boss.
True.
Like, mostly not that bad. But the dailies are the kind of thing where if you have to miss a couple of days, then you're just a couple of days behind everybody else. Which, like, it doesn't, for me, it's not as big of a deal because of when my raids on, you know, week 5. We raid Friday, Sunday, which means that on Tuesday, when everybody's getting their second legendary, I actually have another 3 days to get whatever last minute rep I need to get the memory. So I could miss up to 3 days of rep, basically, and still be on time for that Friday raid. But it's still, I don't like it. Just put the memory at the quest. Just put the on the quest reward. make the ones like give us a revered one on the vendor that's like account bound, so I can like buy a druid one and send it to my druid or something.
Yeah, I mean I get that. I don't know
Anyway, I don't want to get hung up on that. I don't like that. it impacts Brewmasters more than. The list that WoW had, there's a few different specs that this seriously affects. Brewmaster's one of them.
Yeah. That's fair. That is fair. All right. Well, maybe we'll shift gears. That's sort of the week in review. Not too much. Super interesting stuff happened. But we did get, I think the biggest thing is we did get, of course, the release date for the patch. And also this week's PTR build was a release candidate, the first release candidate. So. With this final build, there was a couple of things that came in for us in terms of changes to Monk. So I wanted to touch a little bit about those to start with and then see if that changes anything. And then we can sort of go from there. So in terms of the biggest changes that came in with this final one, there was really mostly Necrolord updates, right? So we have basically the two, a couple things. They increased the effectiveness of Bone Dust Brew, right? So your abilities now, when they hit a second time, are now 40%, or hit with 40% effectiveness instead of 35% effectiveness. The light buff to both damage and healing on Bone Dust Brew there.
That related to the crit nerf, where now that one, Bone Dust Brew can no longer crit.
Oh, I always forget that one.
Yeah, so you'll see a lot less people getting one shot in PvP, especially.
Yeah, well, we discussed this a little bit last week, but Mistweavers can't crit on their Bone Dust Brew anyway, so this is like straight value for Mistweavers.
Yeah.
For Brewmaster and Windwalker, it's actually a pretty sizable nerf to lose crit. But then you were about to get to the other change that they made to Bone Dust Brew, or to the Legendary, rather.
Yeah, to the Legendary. So basically what they changed the Legendary, which if you don't know what the Bountiful Brew Legendary does, it will sort of spawn a random... it'll cast a random bone dust brew whenever you do damage. I think it's on a 45 second ICD or something like that. I forget the actual ICD of it, but it basically will cast bone dust brew. Sorry?
There's no ICD.
Oh, there's no ICD. So it's a PPM trinket.
Just straight procs.
Yeah. Okay.
1.5 yeah. procs per minute.
Gotcha. Sorry.
Is it a hasted proc?
I think so.
I know I looked at it yesterday.
Before this change, it didn't matter, because what would happen is if you got a proc and bonus brew was already on the target, nothing would happen. Nothing would happen.
Exactly.
I'd say it's hasted, so it must be on, it might be unhasted.
So that's obviously pretty bad. And it was especially bad actually for brewmasters, because the cooldown for bone dust brew on brewmasters is actually about half as much as it is for the other specs, because we have brew cooldown reduction as one of our like spec mechanics. Yep. And that applied to bone dust brew. So we had literally like twice as much uptime on bone dust brew, and that reduced the effective proc rate from 1.5 procs per minute to like 1.2, like 1 to 1.2 for brewmaster. Which is pretty significant. Like, that's a 30% nerf to the legendary.
Right.
So now it's still slightly janky. If you get a proc, it extends your bone dust brew debuff. You cast bone dust brew while they have the debuff, it resets the buff duration. It does not.
It's a weird interaction. I don't like it.
Yeah. I did play around with the Sims yesterday. It is not worth, at least for Brewmaster, it is not worth trying to like micro your bone dust brew with Merilith to get more Kevin's Oozlings out, and because there's stuff in the Necrolord Soulbinds that triggers off of you using your Covenant ability, one of which being Kevin's Oozling. The best way to play with bonus brew now is like, if you have bonus brew on your target, you just don't cast it. You wait for the debuff to drop, basically, and then you cast it again. At least for Brewmaster. I don't know if it's the same for Windwalker. Because your buff up time is just the most important thing about Necrolord at this point.
Yeah. I mean, for Windwalker, the procs are more difficult to use because you're resource limited. Mm-hmm. You know, so if it procs and you don't have any chi, you got to spend some time to build up chi, you know, to be able to spend it. So in that regard, it's a little bit harder for Windwalker. The other interesting thing, and I don't think you mentioned it, but if you toss down the brew and then get a proc, the proc extends it. But if it procs on a target
and then you cast it,
it doesn't extend it.
It
so
make sense.
You need to, it's going to add, you know, kind of an additional thing that people are going to have to track.
Yeah.
Cause you're not going to want to, you're going to want to make sure you don't cast it while targets are on it. So that, you know, while it's on a target, so that can kind of throw off some of the flow, you know, especially like if you get a proc on pull, you know, and you're counting on, okay, this is what I use. Right. You know, you're going to have to kind of fight that muscle memory to a certain extent. You know, so it's a minor disruption, but a kind of disruption nonetheless.
Yeah. Which as a, like, this does have serious upside. Like, Laryl did some testing of this and got a log where they cast bone dust brew and then just chain proc'd and had it up for over a minute. And that's on live. That's not in Sims. This is actually something that happened like on a target dummy. I have Sims where it with Brewmaster, it maintained just continuous bone dust brew uptime for over a minute and a half. And then, of course, by that point, bone dust brew is up against you. Just cast it again immediately after the buff drops.
Yeah. That's crazy.
That's of course, that is way, 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 like, this is a thing that can happen. It is very unlikely to happen. That is, like, the maximum observed duration of bone dust brew in a sim that's doing, you know, 100,000 iterations is 90 seconds. Yeah. You're super unlikely to see that in practice, but it's still like a very good buff. And actually for Brewmaster, mostly evens out with the crit nerf, just because of, I guess, our increased uptime already. like hurting the legendary more than other specs, it ends up evening it out. But
yeah, and for for Mistweaver, the change will be interesting because like with you guys, all of your damage or all of your procs are going to be on your target typically. For Mistweaver, the actual procs from the legendary can be on any target we heal too. So it'll be much more difficult to potentially see some use of it because as we have hot spread and things like that, you know, unless the raid group is fairly stacked, you might get a proc on a hunter that's standing all by themselves and it only hits that hunter, right? So it'll be a little bit more difficult to take advantage of like a continuous proc. But no, I think this, I mean, it for Mistweaver, to be fair, like this is a good, like it's a, like we said, the effectiveness buff is just a straight buff for Mistweaver since the heal portion of Bone Dust Brew never crit. And the power itself, now that it'll extend duration, potentially somewhat usable. However, for us, I mean, we're more focused on like the initial cast being solid in terms of the number of like players it hits, being able to make use of some of the soulbind buffs. And, it doesn't really, I mean, it's a nice increase. It doesn't really boost Necrolord as our best covenant at this point. Right. But it's a solid little buff to, I'm sorry.
Is that still Venthyr?
I think the jury's still out, I'll say. Like, it's so, like, Venthyr, it's going to depend a lot, at least for healers, right? It's going to depend a lot on how the actual healing, like, or how the damage profiles are for these fights, right? Because if it is every 2 minutes, you need a fairly solid, like, healing throughput, Venthyr's still strong there, right? Yeah. But to be fair, so is Necrolord, because Bonus Brew is a minute cooldown, right? So it's like... Yeah. They're still both very good for what they do. We'll see. I think the only, but I think in the context of Mistweaver, Necrolord, just solid buffs, but I don't think we get to have the fun that you guys have, like extending things or having to manage anything crazy. Like, we just keep healing and hopefully we get a good proc off the legendary power when we use it. So,
I mean, Brewmaster doesn't really play around with, like, there's nothing in the APL, there's nothing in, you know, how you use things to play around with Bone Dust Brew when it's out. Because all our stuff is so short, like cooldowns are just like in such a way that you don't really have to. Bone Dust Brew lasts for 10 seconds. You can get two keg smashes off exactly, no matter whether you hold keg smash or not. You are going to get, you know, 2 to 3 blackout kicks in it, and that's it. Like, there's nothing really to hold. Like, there might be for Windwalker where you want to generate your chi and then press Bone Dust Brew,
right?
We don't have that, like, building up resources beforehand, so for us this is just like passive damage.
So I mean, it'll, I guess it's generally interesting changes, right? Like, the whole overwrite thing has been something that I don't know how much it's affected you guys, but like for Mistweavers, we used to have an issue with like renewing mist where we would have, because it jumps around on random, not random targets, but it jumps around on targets. We'd have a situation early on back in Legion where, like, we called it munching, but you could basically be casting Renewing Mist on a target as another Renewing Mist jumped to that target, and you'd basically lose one. So they've been doing good about, like, pushing things, like, either extending or, like, pushing things like that where you don't, like, lose, essentially, the effectiveness of whatever the ability is. But it's just, it sucks that they can't do it reverse. There's always this weird stuff, man, with like monks where it's like, it only works ever halfway or like in one specific way. It's
the monk class fantasy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So,
I mean, I guess real quick, for Brewmaster, this doesn't make Necrolord right now, once you get your 4 set, this does not make Necrolord competitive with Kyrian. Kyrian interacts with Keg Smash, basically. That's Kyrian interacts with Keg Smash. The set interacts with Keg Smash. Together, they make Keg Smash real good. And so, combined with Braun being just a real big boy, you're going to be playing Kyrian in raid, almost certain. Which, I guess, grain of salt, the work's not done yet. And there's always a chance that there's sim bugs, but given how much of the changes, you know, are also Windwalker changes, like, I'm more confident that the stuff is correct because there's twice as many people looking at it to, you know, notice issues.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. All right, I guess, do we want to spend, so that's, I guess that's on like the Necrolord changes, the Bone Dust changes, right? So no real major impacts, really any of the specs. If it was good before, it's still good now.
I have one more thing. Since we're talking about Covenants being good for specs,
yeah,
I have numbers on Venthyr now.
Okay. Is it good?
It's no? better than Nightfae.
Really? Yes. Yes. My goal is to not ever be, I have never been Nightfae yet. I'm never going to be Nightfae in any content. So that's the goal, is to go through this entire expansion with Nightfae just being absolute trash.
It's better than Nightfae, and it's just down to the Venthyr legendary being a lot better than the Nightfae legendary.
Right.
So when you add both of them, Nightfae goes up by less than Venthyr. So they're very close. They're actually super, super close. Like I say better, it's like 30 DPS. It's like 1%. It's fine. They're both like 5% behind Necrolord, which is itself like five to maybe it's 8% behind Kyrian on single target. So it's like not even close to being top, but it's less embarrassing by a lot.
It's fair. That is fair. Yeah, that is. I mean, look, I'm all for Venthyr, man. Everybody should be Venthyr. That should be the covenant of choice. Just have some little monks pop out a portal and cleave. Like that's the best fantasy I want.
It's definitely the, you know, it's the one that I always said, you know, if it ended up being strongest for Windwalker, I wouldn't be mad, because you just press it and forget it. Like, all right, cool, guys, you go do your business. I'll be over here doing my normal stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I wish Nightfae were better. I wish Feyline Stomp were like a real button that was worth pushing. It's almost to the point where like I genuinely wondered, I haven't run Sims on this, I genuinely wonder if it's worth moving Feyline Stomp down from its current position in the Brewmaster APL to be like Tiger Palm tier instead of where it currently is. Because the ability just is so, it's just doesn't do very much damage.
Yeah.
Just doesn't do very much damage. It doesn't have a good defensive upside. The entire Covenant across so many specs is entirely carried by like Nia, Dreamweaver's new like 12% haste trait for some classes, and then Karain's like crit buff that you can abuse by switching targets. Like nobody cares about this Covenant ability outside of a couple of specs. Everybody uses those three soulbind traits.
Yeah. That's funny. Oh man. All right. Well, I think maybe this is a good time before we jump into like, because I think the big topic we'll talk about is sort of like the your sort of transferring and stuff like that. I did want to maybe we ask the question here to Babs about some tier sets. We can talk about our tier sets, maybe see if they're gonna be good, things like that. So basically, now that we have the release candidate, right? We'll talk about Windwalker tier sets. Their tier sets basically, this, I don't think this has changed, Bab, so correct me if I'm wrong, but the two piece is essentially a 40% damage increase to Fists of Fury.
Yep.
And then the four piece is after 10 offensive abilities, your next three offensive abilities deal an additional 22% damage.
Yes.
So now that we got the release candidate, these aren't changes. Hina did ask a question a couple weeks ago about some potential changes to the Windwalker tier set, if those were coming in. But I guess, is this the original version, or did they end up changing this at all?
This is still the original version. There were, you know, whispers, rumors, reports, you know, of a potential other option.
Yep.
You know, but that has not materialized. So, you know, there's still, the chance that it does. There's still time for it to change. You know, I mean, just looking back, I mean, it could change after release. You know, that's unlikely, but it's not something that we've not seen happen before.
The Brewmaster one in Antorus got changed after release.
Right. Yeah.
So, because it was broken and you could dodge literally everything ever. But
tossing a nice double negative, you know, yeah. I mean, it has happened before that changes like this have occurred after release. It's not likely that will happen, you know. Certainly, and thank God, because for theory crafters, that's just like shooting us in the head. So there was the potential for another, you know, some minor changes, just kind of the ways that it goes about it, you know, because right now the way that the tier set, specifically the four set, because really the two set obviously is just kind of more or less passive, which is nice. There's not, you know, everybody wanted Fist of Fury to do more damage, and now it's going to do more damage, so that's nice. You know, no real problems in that regard. But the four piece, you know, is one that kind of at the same time that, you know, it opens up some fun potential for maximizing and stuff, it opens up some fun potential for maximizing, and that can be a negative, you know, as well. Yep. You know, because it, of the way that it functions, and let me pull up the exact wording so I don't goof it. What's it called? Something potential?
Primordial potential.
Babs, how bad is it going to feel to go through your 10 ability hits and, you know, you go through your then three increased damage ones, and then as you cast the third one, you get a Mark of GG proc.
Right. In single target.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, yeah, so, you know, something like that. So it, I think, you know, looking at it, because it does say offensive abilities, then your next three, you know, so it does, the problem that I have with it is that it should, in my opinion, say, you know, abilities that proc master, you know, that proc your mastery, because then you are punished by doubling up. You know, right now there is a theoretical, and again, you know, this is still theoretical, but you know, if you use two blackout kicks, that's two chi to get through, or that, you know, two chi to get through two abilities in the offensive abilities versus using Rising Sun Kick, which is one ability for two chi. You know, so there are theoretical ideas, and it right now it doesn't look like we'll need to be doing this, but there's a theoretical point at which you just spam Blackout Kick and Tiger Palm in between, and then use those three abilities to be Rising Sun Kick, Whirling Dragon Punch, and Fist of Fury. That is a not impossible possibility. You know, which just sounds like it'll be the worst thing in the world. you know, from just every aspect that it could be.
Oh my God. Is Mastery a dump stat for Windwalkers right now?
No, it's strong. It's still a good stat. You know, obviously doing this would have a small effect, you know, on it with some of our, you know, with some of our abilities, you know, thankfully the abilities you'd be, you know, losing mastery bonus on are the ones that do the least amount of damage. So, you know, that kind of plays into the potential for that.
Yeah.
You know, right now it looks like you'll do things, you know, probably like holding a Chi-Gi proc, or, you know, if you get, okay, I'm at seven now and I've got Fist of Fury up, I'm going to use two more abilities or three more abilities to get into that proc window. You know, other things like Rising Sun Kick, because of the manner of its cooldown, you can kind of more reliably plan on, okay, I'm going to have one in the window, and then I'll be able to fit one, maybe two out of the window, and then still have a fourth one in the window. You know, depending on your haste values and stuff like that. Then you get things like Weapons of Order that throws, you know, an additional wrench into it. You know, with the cooldown reduction and stuff like that. There's people checking out if Serenity, you know, makes things, you know, more manageable or less manageable.
Right.
You know, so there's just a lot of flux, and it's one of those things that, you know, do you want it to be weak enough that you just kind of play normally and it's passive, or do you want it to be, you know, and be bummed then that it's passive, or be strong enough that you have to cater to it and be bummed that it makes you hate the way Windwalker plays, you know? So it's one of those, it's definitely a fine line. I don't envy the person with the numbers at Blizzard who's got to try and decide what the number is, because they will have to walk a fine line between, you know, making it seem lackluster and just killing people's, you know, enjoyment of the spec. So It'll be interesting to see how that comes out. I think right now it looks like the higher likelihood is that you'll just kind of not pay attention to it, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, it looks because of the 22% number, you know, if you lose one out of every five Rising Sun kicks to get a Rising Sun kick in, you know, for every five you get in, you can lose a cast throughout the fight, you know, so there is some math in that regard, but it does, you know, it does make that a little bit more difficult. And it is, you know, numbers that are just kind of a pain to exist.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned Weapons of Order. Is Kyrian looking like the play for raiding for Windwalker because of the nerfs to Necrolord?
Yes. Really right now, even before 9.2, you know, Kyrian is the strongest potential for single target. Necrolord is close behind, you know, if not even, and certainly a lot easier to get that potential. And then at AoE, obviously Necrolord wins.
Yeah.
In a dominant fashion, you know, depending on how much AoE and what kind of AoE you're looking at. You know, in 9-2, you know, the gap, Kyrian will probably take a slightly bigger lead. But again, it's got a higher cap to get to that highest potential.
Right. You have to execute your Weapons of Order windows correctly. Yeah.
So I think you'll probably still see people that just stick with Necrolord the whole time and are totally all right with that and really don't see issues, you know, sticking with Necrolord. On the flip side, you'll see people that stick with Kyrian and see no issues just being Kyrian the whole time. That'll be kind of an interesting back and forth. You'll still probably the best players will probably switch back and forth, you know, single target or fights with specific 2-minute bursts will lean towards Kyrian. AoE, you know, fights with consistent AoE or 1-minute burst might lean, you know, will lean towards Necrolord. A big part is that the Kyrian legendary for Windwalker is kind of bleh. Because if it worked with, you know, Invoker's Delight and proc'd Invoker's Delight and gave you haste, and then you would stagger your Zuen versus your Weapons of Order Zuen, that would be fantastic and kind of ridiculous. But you know, I did
check that for Brewmaster as well. Yeah.
So it's at the point right now where Call to Arms is just kind of nice, but there's some kind of munching, to use, you know, Anomaly's word, between the two Zuens that makes it kind of odd in the way that they interact. But it's not a net negative. It's theoretically like a very small net positive. But it certainly will make their logs look very silly when they're stealing damage from each other. You might have one Zuen that does, you know, 10 times the amount of damage of the other Zuen because of the way that they'll, you know, it'll steal the damage from the other, which would be goofy. But so the kind of lacklusterness of Call to Arms helps kind of rein Kyrian in with Bountiful Brew in single target, because you're not really going to be using, Bone Dust Brew for the chi reduction. You know, if you get a Dance of Chi Proc in single target, that's just a chi gain. You know, congratulations, you get an extra chi. A Bone Dust Brew proc is just extra damage on top of what you'd already be doing anyway. Bountiful Brew is a little bit nicer because it's less disruptive in single target. So there's some, you know, kind of mitigating factors that keep them really to the point that if you want to play one, you play one. If you want to play the other, play the other. If you want to play both, and you're going to be just fine.
Yeah. It's interesting to hear about Call to Arms for Windwalker, because for Brewmaster, it's actually really significant gain to stagger your Weapons of Order and invoke Nie Zhao with Call to Arms.
Right.
Because they don't, if you purify, that goes into your next stomp. If you have both of them running at once, which you can have both of them running to once, whichever one stomps first gets it. And the other one gets nothing.
Right. But you want that maximum Dave uptime. as opposed to Windwalker that kind of wants to maximize that window and try and squeeze everything, you know, into those buffs as possible. So that's cool. I like that. I like that for Brewmaster. You know, I like the idea of staggering as much as I love the idea of having double Zuen, and I loved it in Battle for Azeroth, you know, with Fury of Zuen as a Azerite trait. Like that was one of my favorite things, having double Zuen. I made a weak aura just for that. So I knew it, you know, when it was happening. That was a lot of fun. So I like the idea of staggering, you know, Zuen's even, you know, or Niu Zhao's for Brewmaster. I think it makes a lot of sense in it, and it has an effect. It's a very tangible, you know, noticeable increase in performance, you know, with that legendary. Whereas Windwalker, the tangible effect is not there. The numerical effect will be there, but it's just kind of, you keep on, Windwalker has a lot of things that it's just kind of, oh, we think you, maybe you cater to it, but nah, you're actually just going to keep doing what you're going to do, you know, and you get the benefit you get. And, you know, if you don't get a benefit, then you don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you're a Mistweaver and you absolutely hate it unless you run Invoke Chi Chi, because like Yulon, the extra Yulon is just absolutely useless because you don't have the mana to support it. So,
like, well, and I don't think, I don't, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think Mistweaver's in any danger of going Kyrian.
Not in a raid. Not in a raid. I mean, I think you can run it in a raid, but it's definitely, it'll definitely be stronger in Mythic Plus for sure. But in a raid, I mean, it'll be Necro and, it'll be Necro and Venthyr. I couldn't think of the other one. And really, to be fair, it's looking more and more like Necro, just because you have a little bit more control over the burst potential.
I can't wait for all three Monk specs to just be Necro Lord next year. Like, Kyrian being the best for Brewmaster is dependent in part on Invoke Niu Zhao being good. If Invoke Niu Zhao is not good because the damage is lower or the damage profile doesn't line up with it, then Necrolord gets significantly closer and doesn't require you, like, it doesn't have the insane variance that Invoke Niu Zhao can have.
Yeah.
So if the damage is lower than we expected, the damage profile doesn't like line up, Necrolord Brewmaster might be the play as well. And if that's the play, then we might be in a situation where all three Monk specs are on the same covenant.
Be interesting. Right.
Which, you know, from, you know, for anyone that multi-specs, you know, having one covenant, one thing to worry about, like, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, for me, I would pick, you know, my preference is Kyrian, you know, but Necrolord, you know, is fine. Necrolord is simpler, you know, at least for Windwalker in terms of...
It is for Brewmaster, too. You just throw the cooldown.
Yeah, and Necrolord for me, I mean, and I've talked to Emelson about this a bunch. Like, I tanked in the days when tanks didn't do damage, you know, when you did nothing, you know. And then, I mean, I tanked during the days of Vengeance, you know, as well. So, right, was that what that was called?
The stuff that Vengeance,
So, like, where you got more damage by being a better actual tank. Well, by tanking more.
Yes. Yeah.
Or by being a degenerate.
Yeah.
Which is how Brewmaster is right now. We have one more raid clear in Sanctum. And if every other boss goes smoothly next week, I'm going to see if I can convince people to let me do really degen stuff on Guardian with Cult.
I mean,
I want to go for a million damage from Invoke Niu Zhao.
You've been doing I know you guys were doing parse, you know, stuff for
with other healers do it. With other healers too.
Like, I think it's well within your rights to be able to say it's parse week for tanks.
Well, I only want that one boss. That's the only boss. And it's only because I want the most damage I've seen in a log from Invoke Niu Zhao on that boss is 800,000.
Yeah, I'm concerned. I'm concerned. And I'm glad that you know, we'll have our last raid before you guys will, because I think if Mango sees that you're able to get parse stuff, I think she'll lose her mind. And I'm concerned of what Mango would do if given the green light for maximum parsing.
That's awesome.
I'm not sure.
Is that's why she's on DK now? Because DK's DK damage is ass. Therefore,
parsing it'll either be glorious or terrible, and nothing in between.
Awesome.
Especially with Schlim playing as Paladin, like, I mean, if you listen to our raids, it's, did you taunt? No, I didn't. Did you taunt? You taunt. You had to taunt. No, I didn't taunt. You had to taunt. Like,
because he's playing paladin.
So you can always, you can always know when she's got Dave out too, because there's like a whole other level of urgency for that. You know, how dare you potentially taunt while I have Dave out?
I have a weak gore for that. You should have, I will send it to Schlim. It puts big text on your screen that says, Angry Dave. Your co-tank has Angry Dave.
I believe that you sent that to me when we were tanking heroics. And I just gave up on ever casting Muse out because it seemed like you always had Dave up when I wanted to cast it.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yes.
That is awesome. Oh God. All right. Well, maybe we'll transition a little bit. So that's sort of like, it sounds like, just in general, just to wrap this topic up, that like Necrolord, at least for Necrolord for Windwalker, Necrolord Kyrian, really some options for Windwalker. Similar for Brewmaster, though Kyrian is leading in that department. Mistweaver, you know, it's Necro Venthyr, I think, for a raid perspective at this point. So the only good news coming out of all this is that Night Phase not being discussed at all. And I love it.
I started the expansion as Night Phase. I was Night Fae until I had to swap to Kyrian to do Windwalker arenas before Necrolord got disgusting.
Yeah, I was Night Fae up until we started progression, and then I switched to Kyrian begrudgingly.
Never been Night Fae.
But I was Night Fae for probably the first four bosses of Castle Nathria, and then I swapped to do PvP for gear. And I never swapped back. I tried swapping back to do some keys this Night Fae, this patch, and failings don't feel so bad. Oh my God, I just don't want to push the button. Like, it lights up, I'm like, do I have to? Do I really have to push that button?
Exactly.
It looks nice and feels bad.
Yeah, I felt like it just didn't have enough oomph, you know, as Brewmaster. Like, I didn't feel good pressing it, you know, as Brewmaster. Like, I felt like there should have been something else that I was better off pressing. Whereas, like, Windwalker, you have kind of that time in between. Now you have less. And with the Covenant Legendary, you would have even less because it procs so much more often. But, like, for Windwalker, it felt like a nice filler to use. Like, during Nathria Farm, I switched to Night Fae and did a lot of Night Fae farm on Windwalker. But then when I would tank, like, Heroic or something on Brewmaster, it just didn't feel like it had the oomph that I wanted, especially on pull, you know, and especially when compared to being able to double keg.
It's really, you know, the really awkward piece of it too is the conduit. So Abe is referencing the conduit in chat, but the conduit only works in AoE. The conduit does stone cold nothing on single target. And that's where it needs the most help. It's already an AoE button. Make it work. Like, what? Okay. And I understand that they want abilities to be good in different situations, but like, the whole covenant rests on whether the soul binds and ability is good in both single target for raid and AoE for Mythic Plus. And trying to make it just be one is just a feels bad. And it ends up not even being the good one for AoE either. So it's just bad everywhere.
Right. Which is just the way everybody wants it to be all the time. There's never any problems when that happens.
Oh man, awesome. All right, well then let's move into our final topic of the day here, which is, of course, we'll call it OE or occasional excellence transferring, but it's really, I think, a broader topic of like the fact that a bunch of systems Blizzard have put in place and a bunch of things they've taken away over the past couple of weeks has made it very hard for any sort of progression guild to exist on a smaller population server, right? So I guess maybe I'll let you guys introduce the topic and we'll go from there.
Yeah, so occasional excellence. It's my guild, it's Bab's guild. We both were in different teams in the guild, so there's two teams in this guild. How long has occasional excellence been on Terralian?
7 years.
At least 7 years. Yeah.
Because actually maybe almost 8, because I joined OE almost 7 years ago. It'll be 7 years in April. And OE had been on Terralian for probably about a year before that. So yeah, so maybe 8, maybe coming on 8 years, or maybe already over 8.
Wow. Yep. So we made the announcement, I think yesterday, maybe the day before yesterday. we are going to be transferring servers. We are now in the process of narrowing down the choice. We have two options that we've listed that people are voting on, and we will be transferring before, I think, before 9.2. Yes. I don't actually know.
That is currently, yeah. That is kind of not been, that's not seeing the same fluctuation as the server choices has been as we kind of release the floodgates on campaigning for either of our choices. It's been hilarious to watch.
So there's a few different things that led to this. And one of them is boosting. And they clarified that you're not allowed to do cross-realm advertising. So we can't have people on the big servers advertising for people doing sales on a small server. Which on the one hand, like, people in our guild that do sales are really excited that the communities were getting banned because the communities stepped on their toes. But then on the other hand, virtually all of our sales in like 8.3, when we were selling those auth mounts, virtually all of them were off realm. And we're looking at sales now, and we're looking at the population that's rallying and going, there's just not a lot of people to sell to now. And here's the rub for me. The only reason that the sales would, at least for me, motivate moving, like, obviously sales are nice. I like being able to afford fancy mounts. but I can do without more fancy mounts because I can get the raid mounts and things like that, and I'll be happy with that. Legendaries are so expensive on Turalyon. I got, so if somebody in our guild was transferring a character from Illidan recently, and I had them buy me a ring on Illidan and bring it with them because it was 65,000 gold cheaper.
Yep.
It was literally half price on Illidan compared to Turalyon. And that goes for a number of things. Like the materials, like we talked about this early in the expansion, and I'm going to rehash a couple of the points, but the materials requirements for legendaries are insane. Yeah. The amount of materials that go into leveling up your legendary crafting to actually just crafting the legendary itself is just insane. When you don't have a large population like an Area 52 or even a Thrall or Mount Ganis kind of population to farm those materials, legendary prices are ridiculous because only a couple people control the entire market and they can set whatever price they want for everybody that doesn't have access to do guild bank transfers with legendary items, basically. And that means that now there's this huge upfront cost at the start of the tier. All of our raiders are going to want to get rank 2, at least rank 7 legendaries. One for recrafting Unity with better stats, one for recrafting or, you know, just upgrading their other legendary. And unlike feasts and cauldrons and things where the cost is diffused across the entire tier, like, we don't need all of the feasts and cauldrons we're going to use on the jailer week one of the tier. We can work on that during the course of the tier. Legendaries we need right away. Like, we need those basically in the first month of the tier. And so there's this enormously expensive upfront cost that is, in fact, far more expensive than it would be if we were on another realm. And honestly, just kind of impractical for us to get the materials for ourselves. We can't just be like, okay, everybody go farm materials for your own legendary and bring it to the crafter. And that's how we're going to address the problem because the materials costs are too high. We tried doing that in 9.0 and we got to rank 2. And then it became more economical to do guild bank transfers with legendary items from Area 52 than it was to just craft them on realm.
Right.
So really there's a number of issues, and like, boosting plays a role, but the reason, like, it's this intersection of the boosting ban, meaning we can't earn the gold to afford the legendaries on this realm, combined with the fact that legendaries themselves are just so incredibly expensive. I think that legendaries, as much as I like the overall implementation, it really is, again, it failed in the details. If, like, the expense, the materials requirements for them, they failed in the details, and I think it's actually one of the biggest failures in Shadowlands just because of how inaccessible they are and how it is, in my opinion, it is the one thing that's really forcing us to move, is the cost of legendaries.
Yeah.
Which Babs might have a different opinion, but.
No, I mean, that I think is absolutely a big part of it. You know, if you look at, you know, basically legendaries took everything and turned it up to 15, you know, not even 11. You know, and on a server like, you know, he's been on Turalyon forever. We were able to make a lot of money doing sales on Turalyon for years. You know, and then sales communities came and made it a lot harder. And then legendaries came and almost made sales communities a necessity. You know, because it really just, it made things so expensive, you know, like Emelson said, in a big chunk. You know, you can't just, you know, daily your way to a legendary. You can't just farm your way to a legendary. Because if you are a raider, or really anybody, you want the legendary first. You want the legendary early. You know, you can be on a lifeline for flasks and for feasts and potions and stuff, where you can make just enough to keep going. Yeah. But for legendaries, it's a huge upfront cost. So what it did was it made sales more necessary, which then made sales communities more necessary. Because, you know, because sales communities stole, in my opinion, they took gold off of small servers and funneled it onto the big servers. The big servers had more of the representation of the sellers. So that's where the money went. Even if they had more representation of the buyers, there was a higher likelihood of gold being siphoned off of smaller servers rather than gold from big servers ending up on smaller servers. You know, there was a hoarding effect caused by sales communities transferring. And that is, I think, a big part of why Blizzard wanted to crack down on it. The problem is the genie's already out of the bottle. And I feel like I have used that saying like 9 times today. And, you know, but it became a point, it got to the point where the systems that Blizzard created made it prohibitive to not be part of a sales community or to not have a large influx of gold from somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, so really, you know, for OE, you know, and, you know, I'll be the first to tell you, you know, this sucks. I don't like this. I don't, it hurts, you know, my heart, you know, as somebody that has been on Turalyon for almost 7 years, you know, has been the GM of the guild for years. I ran sales for all of Legion and all of Warlords, you know, and, you know, it sucks. It really kind of hurts on a personal and emotional level to, you know, to really have the signs be so clear that it's better for OE to go somewhere else. Because, you know, even if next expansion comes and there's not a huge chunk of gold,
mm-hmm.
You know, that, you know, if it goes back into, okay, yeah, like you can buy the long boy, you know, and or type thing. And I think that's a big evidence that I don't think gets brought up enough. But what is the long boy of, you know, of Shadowlands?
It's high rank legendaries.
Right. Is there one? I mean, we had Traveler's Tundra Mammoth. You know, that was kind of, all right, you got a big chunk of gold, you can get that. Then we have the one with the transmog mount on it.
Yeah.
Like, all right, you got the big gold, you can get that. Then we have the auction house mount. All right, you got the big gold, you can get that. What is there for Shadowlands? And the answer is there's nothing, because who can hoard gold like that when you have to buy legendaries? You know, even if there was something like that, the percentage of people that would have it would have to be enormously smaller. You know, and especially now without sales communities. Sales communities paid for a lot of auction house mounts.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You can ask in our raid group, you know, hey, somebody get on your long boy, and we'll have 6 pop up. Like, 6 people just immediately get on your mount. And that's not even everybody that has it. That's just the people that responded in time to be, you know, casting at the same time. And I think like a long boy is a lot more healthy as a kind of optional gold sink, where if sales communities didn't exist, I wouldn't have gotten a long boy and that would have been fine.
Right.
You don't need a long boy to raid. But in a strict sense, you don't need a high ranked legendary to raid either. But who's going to look at all of the systems and all of the way that like Blizzard tunes bosses and everything? Who's going to look at all of that together and say it is correct for you to wear a rank 1 legendary that's cheap instead of wearing a rank 7 or even a rank 4 back in Castle Nathria? You know, who's going to do that?
Right. Well, and I think the big problem is that, and we've gone, you know, because we're doing a big donation drive, you know, trying to get people to buy stuff.
Our materials spreadsheet. Yeah. We have
It's world class. Like, the only other guilds that I could see doing something in the manner that we're doing it are the world class guilds. And that's, you know, I can't imagine that it is a common thing.
And so this is, we could, the issue here is not that we don't have the gold to buy the materials that we need to make the legendaries. The issue here is that there physically are not the materials to buy on Tyrallian to spend the gold to make the legendaries. We have the gold in the guild bank to buy everybody the materials to build all of the legendaries. The materials just don't exist on Tyrallian.
Gotcha.
So we are asking for literally materials donations. Like, gold doesn't cut it unless you're going to be spending the gold on Illidan or Area 52 and transferring with the materials.
Right.
And this is something I complained about this a lot at the beginning of the expansion, because I was the one responsible for handling legendary leather crafting and mail crafting. And quintupled the cost, the materials cost of the leather legendaries a week before the expansion release. And this ultimately is the consequence of that decision.
Yeah. It's so interesting to me. Cause like I moved a guild way back in the day, back around Throne of Thunder timeframe. Right. And the reasonings are so different, right? So like I moved an alliance guild from Laughing Skull to Kel'Thuzad. And the reason wasn't for materials or like lack of community. It was literally like nobody rated alliance on Laughing Skull anymore. So it was like players. And so like at that point, like the reason that we moved was just we didn't have the recruitment potential. And there was much less like cross, like transfers were not like, well, they were in the game. Yeah. It wasn't like a thing people did. It was just expensive. And like you wouldn't spend money at the time to move just to raid. And so hearing you guys talk about the fact that it's like an economic reason is so interesting. Cause like it's not something like I've always been on big servers. So I went from like Kel'Thuzad, which is super alliance dominated, probably still is, you know, to Stormrage, again, huge alliance server, to Mal'Ganis, which is one of the larger horde servers, right? So I've never been on a small server where
Tyrallian was bigger, even in the time that I've been here. So I came over here at the beginning of Uldir. And it was bigger just over the past two expansions. Just some of it's the player base itself kind of
shrinking,
you know, shrinking. And some of it is that as it has shrunk, it's become more concentrated in Area 52 and Illidan.
Yep.
Where now those two servers together have what, like 20 something percent of the US raiding population.
Yeah,
or the US, 20, not even rating, Mythic Plus population.
25%.
Over 25% on those two servers. Yeah. And so recruitment, actually, funny enough, not even a factor. We have had I've been doing recruitment for OE weekend. There has been a grand total of one person that I've ever talked to that we interviewed, that we offered a trial, that said, you know what, I actually don't want to be on a small server. One person. I have talked to hundreds and hundreds of people. There are people that you will go and you will look at their WoW prog and they will say, I am not interested in transferring off of Area 52 or Illidan. Those do exist. Half the time people just check the box, and then if you talk to them, they will be willing to move for the right guild anyway. And so if you talk to them and you're like, oh yeah, we're a CE guild that's been around for half a decade.
Yeah.
You know, or CE, like my team's been around since for 4 years now. So it's
right.
they will transfer for something like that. They may not transfer off of Area 52 for an upstart.
Right. Yeah.
So that's not been, recruitment is not a factor in our decision. And some of it is, it's very interesting to me to hear how back in, you know, Throne of Thunder, people weren't really transferring for recruitment. You recruited on Realm.
Right.
Nobody in OE that is there right now started on Turalyon. Literally none. Yeah. I don't think there's a single raider that was on Turalyon when we recruited them. Actually, no, I take that back. There's one. We have a hunter. There was a casual heroic raider on Turalyon that my raid leader ran into, and we ended up recruiting them. And that's it. That's one out of over 50 raiders in our guild.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's like the interesting way that like you sort of view the game now is it like, yeah, back then it was more of like you didn't need, like, you needed raid materials, but to that point you didn't need a bunch to like upfront starting position, right? Like,
yeah,
you needed to get like flask, food, all that type of stuff was still around back then, but the bigger things was just getting bodies, right? And like you'd see like the slowly siphoning of like a guild dying or a guild transferring around you. Like, we were probably, when we transferred off a Laughing Skull at the time, we were probably the last major guild to move, right? Like, we saw three other guilds basically move off Realm before us. And yeah, it was a total recruitment move. So like when we looked at servers, it was like, all right, what's the biggest one that doesn't have issues on patch day, right? Like, we didn't care about the economy. We didn't care about anything like that. And yeah, the biggest thing was like getting enough money to actually pay for everybody's transfers. Like, that was sort of the bigger thing than anything else. But yeah, no, it's the economy aspect of this is so, yeah, you guys just, I mean, it's a bunch of different systems for you guys, right? Like, prices are high. Like, prices are high just because of the token and because of like sailing, like boosting communities, right? And the fact that like boosting became such a widespread thing, like, compounded the fact of like, oh, like now, like as a raider, like today, like back then I would have to farm my own pots and flasks and stuff like that because we just didn't, the guild did not make gold, right?
Yeah.
Like, you got, maybe, I think we got free repairs, right? Like, that was the perk.
Yeah. But
like, I mean, everything else was sort of your individual.
We have like officers basically cover a lot of costs for feasts and things. But also there's stuff like, one of the major costs is Shade Stones, the daily alchemy craft. So it's time limited. You can't get a bunch at the start of the tier, but you don't need a bunch. You need Shade Stones spread out over the course of the patch. So like in Castle Nathria up front, it was like kind of bad. We needed a bunch of Shade Stones, but then after having, you know, two whole tiers of having a bunch of people with alchemy just craft a Shade Stone every day, now they're a complete non-factor. Right. And so it's totally shifted, like feasts and cauldrons. If all we needed were feasts and cauldrons and vantage runes and armor kits and weapon oils and all the other stuff that they added this expansion, as far as consumables, it would be fine. It would be fine. Yeah. We could stay here. The lack of sales would suck, and there are people that would be really unhappy being on a realm where they couldn't effectively sell, but it wouldn't be pressuring the entire guild to make this move before 9.2.
Yeah. Yeah, that's and it's such a rough way to move too. Like, it'd be much different if the conversation was like, hey, if we don't move servers, the guild dies. Like, we just stop raiding because we can't, like, we don't have the bodies to fill, right? Like, that conversation, I think, makes it not easier, right? But I think it's more of a, like, if you want to continue raiding, like, we're going to move, or you can stay here, right? And sort of go casual or try and build something up. But the people want to be sort of more, I'm like, hardcore is the wrong word, but who want to sort of continue to push like mythic raiding can move and there's not an issue. But like, this is more of a, like, from an economy perspective, like, we can't support raiding, which is like such a awful reason to have to move your guild. Like,
well, I mentioned it.
I think it, like, we, and that's where, you know, because I was the most resistant person to moving. I mean, I was a second away from digging my heels in and saying, no, screw you guys, we're staying and you're going to like it. But I started putting data together, you know, and the data swayed me. But I think the big difference is that we can afford to raid right now, you know, on Turalyon. And we have been able to, and we likely still can be able to. You know, we're a big community. We have a lot of people that can help. You know, we can farm up a lot of stuff to cut down on some of those costs. Mm-hmm. We can't really afford to do other things. You know, people can't afford to do other things on Turalyon. There's not a pugs you know, to get at. And now without, you know, sales, it makes it harder for us to gear up new characters. You know, if somebody's going to switch for a raid, it makes it more difficult for that. You know, legendaries is what we can't afford to do, you know, and if there ends up being something even remotely close to what legendaries are now next expansion, where it is a gold sink that is required for performance, it will make any change valuable, you know, and even if it doesn't, you know, the difference in the server prices, the gold, even if you don't make, if you don't do sales, if you farm stuff, you know, or if you just like to quest and that's your source of gold income, your gold goes farther on these bigger servers, you know, in some cases, almost twice as far, you know, so you then have to generate less gold, which makes, you know, sales even less important, you know, so
that's really stark server, when you put it that way. It's really stark that basically the mission tables on Turalyon produce half as much gold as a mission table on A52.
Yes. In terms of buying power with it. Yeah. You know, and that was something that when I mentioned originally, like, I would love for them to put something like garrisons back in. Like, I think economically, Warlords was one of the best times because everybody had a source of things. You really could buy stuff that you wanted because a lot of what you needed was already taken care of. You know, you saw a big increase in the amount of gold that people had. You know, and there was inflation, you know, and Legion cut down on that a little bit. BFA cut down on a little bit, you know, Shadowlands has hit it over the head with a hammer and then consolidated, you know, that inflation. So, you know, I think like to put something that back, if you could generate your own income and be self-sufficient with something like garrisons,
yeah,
you could be twice as self-sufficient on a bigger server. You know, in regards to gold income, you know, that 2000 gold that you get or whatever it is from doing an emissary cash, you know, or, you know, doing a lot of these systems that we've seen in the past goes a lot farther on these bigger servers. So it makes your time more, more valuable. It makes, you know, the time that you do more useful, and you don't have to just more efficient, I guess is the better way to put it, which is to me a big deal.
Right. And I want to like reiterate again, we have people. So in 9.0, we didn't have people in guild that could craft all the legendaries that we needed. We were trying to rank it up, but the materials cost early in the expansion to have rank fours early in the tier. You know, when we were actually trying to have rank fours for progressing a boss like Sledgefist, the level of materials available wasn't there, and buying them and transferring them is what we did. Now, with, you know, two tiers worth of just people farming, there's been materials to get everybody to rank four, but now that we're looking at, you know, we need over 100 legendaries at rank seven. And that's just for everybody getting their one plus one unity craft. For people that maybe need a second one because they swap for single target versus AoE. For people that maybe, like Brewmaster, might have to recraft their main legendary in order to not have it conflict. Right. Now, you're looking at maybe three or four. So if we're looking at maybe, you know, 150 legendary crafts, we have the gold in the guild bank that we could probably just outright buy the materials if they existed on Turalyon, but they don't.
Right.
Right. We have to generate our own.
Yeah. So, I mean, that makes it even worse. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just, there's just so many factors, you know, and, you know, it just stinks, you know, it stinks that there's a lack of server identity these days, you know, like it felt good for me, you know, for, you know, our midweek team to be top on the server, you know, in progression, like that still matters to me. You know, it doesn't matter to a lot of people, you know, these days, and going to a big server, you know, I like to try and eliminate variables when I compare myself or our guild to people, you know, I don't compare us to 5-night guilds because we're a 2-night guild. So that would be insane. We're not playing the same game as those people. you know, I don't like to compare ourselves. I don't like the comparison between European and American guilds. I think there's a dramatic difference in how gaming is viewed in both cultures. There's a big difference in how, you know, your job is viewed in both cultures. You know, I mean, just simply the amount of free time that Europeans have on average compared to Americans is higher. You know, we're doing it wrong. They're doing it right. But, you know, there is that, you know, that change. So I like to eliminate that. I like to look at, like, if I'm going to compare midweek and weekend, I wouldn't even compare midweek and weekend. I would compare weekend to weekend teams or to two night weekend teams. And I'd compare midweek to two night teams or, you know, two night midweek teams. Like, I think I like to look at that. So going to a bigger server, there's a lot more noise, you know, to that. And you kind of lose some of that aspect of, all right, well, yeah, we are on the same server, but, you know, you guys are rating a lot more, you know, so I will, if we go to a bigger server, which we're going to, my competition in my mind will be against the other two night guilds on that server. I could care less about the three night guilds or the five night guilds. I will care about the two night guilds, you know, and even still the fact that we went up to 8 hours and there's two night guilds that raid six. Like, that's an important distinction, you know. Yeah. those 2 hours matter. So that just for me, you know, it just bums me out that it's kind of come to this, you know, in many ways, you know. Yeah. But there's just so many factors. And, you know, when I started putting together the data on it, it just, the signs were too clear to ignore. And I became one of the more proponents for transferring.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, yeah. I mean, that it sucks for you guys in terms of like losing that identity on Turalyon, right? But it's also, yeah, I mean, the reasons are so just so much, I was gonna say so much different, but so different than, like, I feel like they have been in the past, where, like, it used to be lack of players and now it's just like the economy sucks and like there's no way to infuse the guild, because, like, not even like, I mean, boosts to your point are like a great way to get gold off server, but at the same time you can turn that gold into materials, which is what you guys are lacking, right? And then bring it over back, like, through the use of like the token and stuff like that. So yeah,
and that's, we'd have been effectively turning gold on other servers from sales into materials on other servers and bringing them over the whole expansion. And that's been kind of how we were sustaining raiding on Turalyon. Yeah. And now that we can't get gold on other servers
and I think the silliest thing is when we're going through the economy, and then, like, probably can be done talking about this before my brain explodes. But, you know, when looking at the economy on Turalyon, prices for everything is just about twice as much as prices on the big servers, Stormrage, Illidan, Thrall, Mal'Ganis, Area 52, except augment runes. Augment runes are like 40% the cost on Turalyon, maybe 30% the cost on Turalyon. And that is because there are nobody else raiding. It's just us. We are 50% of the CE raiders on Turalyon.
That's crazy.
You know, so you get all of these alts, all of these other players that are looking to sell their veiled augment runes. The only people that are going to buy them are us. So the prices go down, and it's a hilarious thing to do. But it happens for the exact opposite of the reason that prices are lower on other servers.
That's so funny.
So it's just, when I was going through that, it took me a while to kind of wrap my head around the why. And it's just a really bizarre kind of combination of factors that get you there.
Yeah. It's,
that's funny.
Like, I don't slice the data up at the same level of detail as Babs when I'm comparing OE weekend to other teams.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going from, you know, we had Astral and Daybreak and Synthesis, which transferred to Bleeding Hollow and then promptly died, but they didn't transfer for the same reasons that we transferred or are going to transfer. They were transferring, I think, for those recruitment reasons, which
they,
I think,
right. They were transferring to stay alive.
Yeah.
I think, right. I think transferring for recruitment, with the same age, is silly.
We don't have any problem with recruitment. I mean, Occasional Excellence is a known name. You know, people know who we are. We've been around for a long time. you know, we have a lot of people in the guild that are prominent members of communities, you know, like always a brand to a certain extent. You know, yeah. We don't have any problem with, you know, with recruitment. If you're applying to OE, you know what you're applying to.
Weekend has a bigger problem with recruitment than midweek, just because it's right. a weekend team and people right. like having their Friday, Sunday evenings.
Right.
But
that's right.
We have 26 or 27 people on our roster for next year. We're not like we're only looking for people that are like really, really fucking good right now. And so like we also would, I would not say we have a problem with recruitment. It's, but it is going to suck losing, you know, the friendly rivalry between the like four guilds that we had on the server going to something that now there's, well, now there's going to be 15, 20 guilds on the server.
I was more the friendly rivalry with one guild, the unfriendly rivalry with the
other. Yeah, fair enough. But, fair enough.
I mean, I will miss, you know, that animosity a bit. You know, it gives you that little bit of a drive, you know, to just beat the dickens out of them. That is something, you know, when we beat them, you know, I feel good about it. When they beat us, I feel bad about it and they feel good about it. And I like that, you know, so I will probably look for, you know, we'll find that kind of litmus test.
I think they'll find us, but yeah. You
know? But yeah.
So. But yeah. Yeah, I think that about sums it up. And I think the TLDR is we are transferring because the legendary material costs are too high.
Yep.
Yep.
That is the ultimate foundation of the choice we're having to make.
Yeah. For me, it's just a huge feels bad looking at the final round of changes they made to legendary crafting during beta. Mm-hmm. It's just a huge feels bad. But that's a great note to end our episode on.
Real
positive. Very positive note. I think Blizzard is going to learn a lot of lessons from this expansion, and I hope that that's one of them. Like, I like a lot of things about the legendary system, but the materials costs are not one of them.
Yep.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is going to be it for our show today. Babs has a D&D game that he's going to go DM, which shout out to that D&D game. That is the Peak of Serenity D&D campaign open to our patrons. And if you are a patron and you're interested in joining, Babs can get you the Discord. Like, you can just ping him on Discord. Don't everybody do it at once. Go ping Babs, though.
You know what's going to happen.
But, yeah. And if you enjoyed this show, you like this show, you like the work that we do over on Peak, working on guides and all sorts of other things, you can support that by becoming a patron and getting access to that D&D game, which, you know, Babs won't bite. It's fun. By becoming our patron over on patreon.com/peakofserenity. And of course, I would encourage you to join our Discord where you can Patreon or not ping Babylonius whenever you feel like.
Why? Just a reminder, everybody, it's Emelson's birthday today.
Yeah,
he didn't mention that, but it is his birthday today, so be sure to ping him.
It is not.
He said that every time we've wished him happy birthday, so he can't be trusted.
It's always been true. It is not my birthday. That is going to be it for our show today before we start a fight within the guild.
Hey, fine. You guys are going to one server. We're going to another.
Thank you all for listening. And we will see you next week.
Bye.